Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. Hot diggity dang, it's good to see you.
Didn't exist.
What you going to say?
I don't know what my constant complaints would be about in life if Facebook was not a deal. You know, like, it's always it's always something to do with Facebook. How I saw something on Facebook, or somebody was on Facebook irritating me, or Facebook in general is a stupid way to communicate with people. Like, in general, like, if Facebook didn't exist, I'd go back to being mad at, like, the quality of the Kiwis or something. I have no clue what to think.
Kate would start putting up Yelp reviews for the coffee at a Get and Go.
That's terrible.
Hey, man, this was 3 stars.
Hey, I can't believe you brought that up. So I stopped at the Quick Trip on the way here.
That was a bad life choice.
And I got a coffee.
Why?
First of all, it's too expensive. I don't ever buy straight black coffee. I don't buy straight black coffee from the gas station very often. But it was okay. It was $1.79.
What?
That's what I thought.
For a cup of Joe?
It was a little stiff. Second of all, it was some sort of Peruvian blend that was supposed to have a hint of chocolate. And I didn't – Mike, have you ever tasted a coffee and said – and found a hint of anything?
No. In fact, I'd give it back to him. This don't taste like straight coffee like I ordered.
I mean, found a hint of coffee in this.
I don't know how to put this pleasantly, but, like, I mean, coffee is kind of like black turds. It either is or it ain't. It's a thing or it's not a thing. Like, I don't make distinctions.
I have never drank a cup of coffee and thought, it ain't.
This is most certainly coffee.
I'm just saying, like, I'm unable to detect finer distinctions in coffee. Like, I've never tasted it and said, oh, this is different than coffee.
You have to put some time in to be able to seriously get the differences in things. Like, it's like drinking scotch or, like, smoking cigars. Hey. When it says, hey, man, this has a nose of pears and a hint of bourbon casket aged stuff at the bottom, it's like, this just tastes like alcohol to me. Like, you got to put time in. The people that put time into coffee don't go to the gas station.
No, actually, my wife is like that. She can tell the difference between coffee or whatever.
What?
And, it blows me away.
Does she still go to the gas station for coffee, though?
No, never. No.
I didn't think so.
In fact, she's an elitist. We bought a bun coffee maker.
Oh.
Like, that already has a hot tank ready to go at all times. Kicks a whole pot out in 3 minutes.
Oh, man, that's a real beast of it.
Yeah, I mean,
that's pretty sweet.
But I ain't kidding around, you know what I'm saying? But, like, so you're talking about that bourbon thing. So here's the deal. Like, I can't remember what reason I thought this was a good idea. But, like, I went into a liquor store.
It's the worst of all places.
Here's
to
the
me.
Thing. I'd been watching Justified about this you know what I'm saying? About this cowboy man or whatever. And
you are not that guy.
He shoots people. And, like, I mean, every 10 minutes, someone's like, bourbon, hit me with a bourbon or whatever. And I'm like, if someone hit me with a bourbon, I'd be like, do you have any soda?
Where's the chaser?
Because bourbon tastes terrible. And I thought, I got lost on a track of self-indulgence, right? Like, I mean, like, the measure of a man is whether he can swig a bourbon and not make a weird face after it, you know? And so I thought, I'm going to buy bourbon. And so I go into this liquor store, and I say, I thought I could reason with the man at the counter. And so I gave him the gist of my story. I said, here's the deal. I drink soda all the time. I said, but I've got to find a way in a social situation where I don't look like a complete turd when I'm trying to, that I can't take a swill of bourbon and not be like, ha, ha, you know? And I said, so do you have, like, a smooth bourbon or something, or a whiskey?
A smooth bourbon.
That you could recommend for me to try out. Like, I'm probably just going to take, like, a shot of this stuff a night or whatever and see if I can't build up some kind of tolerance. And he goes, we have fruity drinks. I'm like, no, man.
See, this is a man that understands you, Mike.
I'm like, listen, you're missing the point. I said, I am currently the girly man. I'm trying to be – I didn't want to say I've been watching Justified. I want to be able to drink this bourbon.
Do you have a gun selection that yeah. could maybe, like, a smooth gun, too, that it's, I could try out?
It's like going into the gun store and being like, so I want to be like Jack Bauer. Can you get me hooked up with the Jack Bauer package?
What's the starter gun to get there?
Do you have anything that makes me Samuel L. Jackson style? Anything, you know?
I've recently had it with snakes on this plane.
And so me and this dude are going rounds for like 10 minutes, you know? And then people are starting to filter in, and he's like, you know, we have this stuff that's infused with coconut. I'm like, dang it. I need some hardcore looking liquor, you know, but I can't be too rough because I can't. I can't take it.
We have Mike's Hard Lemonade if you'd like that, sir.
He offered me like Mike's Hard Lemonade. There's like this slew of alcohol with some kind of infused mango or whatever. I'm like, and so after 10 minutes, I go, how much is that small bottle of Jack Daniels? That seems manly. And he goes, $5. I said, give it to me. Give it to Jack Daniels. So I take it home, right? And I take one swig at his Jack Daniels. I'm like, oh, man. Oh. I mean, I don't even want to ruin my soda by mixing it with it so I can tolerate it. I'm like, you know what? This don't mean that much to me. I'm going to bail. I put 10 minutes. I walked into the liquor store. I had 10 minutes of conversation. I had a 20-minute ride home. I took one drink of it. I'm like, no, you don't want
this. This is a terrible decision.
I'm not justified. There's certain people that are like bad honky, and I ain't me. You know, I'm just going to have to be the soda man that goes, hey, man, you want a beer? Actually, do you have any soda? That's what I'm going to say because I just cannot tolerate it for any. I hate the taste of it, and I can't shake it.
All right, legitimately, though, I do have a couple bourbons that I'm going to recommend to you if you really want to try it out. And I won't make you buy the bottle. I may already have the bottle. You can try it out.
Well, I'd like to try it.
Okay.
I mean,
I drink bourbon.
Do you?
Yeah. Like, I drink bourbon, I drink scotch and whiskey.
Well, why'd you let me go talk to some secular man I don't know?
I didn't realize you were trying to go justify.
My brother in Christ has bourbon for me to try, and he's nowhere to be found. Like,
I did not realize that you were currently trying to turn yourself into a cowboy from Justified.
Well, I didn't know I had if to you tell you everything.
If you would have called me up and said, hey, Boova, do you by chance know anything about bourbon? I'd be like, heck yeah, man. What are you trying to figure out? Some with a hint of coconut in it? Because I got you taken care of. No, I'm going to get you set up with a couple bourbons that are smooth. You're still gonna make a face. Like there's that's the point of bourbon.
Am I gonna go?
Yeah, there's a good chance of that. You're drinking straight liquor that's anywhere from 35 to 50% alcohol. Like that's what you're doing.
Yeah, that's too much for me.
That's like trying to take a swig of Listerine and going, oh man, I got the minty fresh from it. Like,
hold on
no.
a minute. I don't understand. I don't understand this alcohol binge. Like, how is this not like akin to an episode of Jackass? Like a dude doing something just so people can go, oh, because he yeah. made a face when it happened.
Here's the deal. I haven't tried to impress anybody in like 30 years. You know? It's not that. It's not like I want people to think that man can hold his liquor, right? But this is where TV sucks you in. I watched one episode of Justified, right? And it covers 3 days, and these dudes are swigging bourbon like every hour. They're like, pour me a glass. You know, I'm like, these guys literally drank a whole bottle of bourbon on their own, and they're just fine. They're holding their own. I have one half a glass of beer or something, and my face feels all hot, and I'm like, man, why does it feel so weird in here? I feel like I can't concentrate. You know what I'm saying? Like, I
that means you're not a drunkard. That's a good deal.
There's one time, so I was hanging out with these fellas, right, and we were just having a good old time talking or whatever, and like, no, there's no soda to be found, and I hate water, so I ain't drinking water, right? They're like, do you want a Tecate? I'm like, what is Tecate? And they're like, it's Mexican Bud Light. I'm like, yeah, okay, I guess, whatever. You
be
know,
bold.
Just keep me here for a while, you know? So I drink one glass bottle of this beer, you know, and like everyone's still talking, and I feel like they've turned the heat up 85 degrees. I'm like, why is it so hot in here? I feel like my face is red. Is my face red? And they're just still blabbing away about a bunch of other stuff. Everybody's drinking, having a good time, and I'm like, I feel like I'm wasted. Am I drunk over here? Why is my face all red? I feel like it's super hot. And they're like, you drank like 3/4 of a beer. It's piss warm, and you're still tugging at it. You know what I'm saying? Like, everyone's had 10 by the time I've had the one. I'm like, I just don't feel right, fellas. I feel like I should go to bed. I'm super sleepy.
So Mike, I don't think I'm going to give you any bourbon.
Give me some of this bourbon. Here's the deal. I got to be able to drink something. I want to be able to drink it and go, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
It's going
to
take you years.
Just give that up, man.
I'm going to take a bourbon.
You're not going
to. Yeah, let it go.
You've got your own stuff that, like, you can walk into a room and talk to somebody about fixing a vehicle, right? Like, you know generally enough stuff to fix stuff around your house. You know what it's like to raise goats. Like, you do not need to move your way into the bourbon market not only can I fix vehicles and take care of goats, I also can sip on a nice sip of whiskey. Let's do this.
Here's the thing. I assumed I wasn't going to take up, like, be a crack shot law enforcement man, right? So I'd let that go.
So out of the two options, besides being a marksman law enforcement officer, you decided, I want to be able to swig on some bourbon without going,
That's what I went with, yeah.
If you want me to, I can help you out.
I'm going to need some bourbon, fellas. Nope.
I think you're going to have to let that go, Mike.
Paul didn't speak to it.
Yeah, he did not talk to the Corinthians about it. If you're trying to become a bourbon man after 30-plus years of life, and you want to be able to go, and just enjoy it.
I turned into a feral cat. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, why does it feel like
Because your body's rejecting the poison that you're putting into it.
Yeah.
Your body's going, hey, man, that's going to mess you up. Like, there's nothing good for me in there. Your body's going, no.
I'm just saying, there's something either sophisticated or, I mean, just downright cool about being able to swig a bourbon and be like, yeah, That's living.
I know. I feel like it was a reductionist edit of somewhere in the First Corinthians to say, look, I preach Christ crucified and how to get down on an 80 proof. And some prude in the third century.
And then Paul talked about the Cedar Ridge to the Corinthians. Look, it's nice smooth with a pear nose to it. It's good stuff.
I'm not saying I want to get schnockered on bourbon. I'm just saying I want to be able to drink one and be like, yeah, that was all right. Not fetal position in the corner. Be like, it's so hot in here. I can't drive.
Lord,
I can't see.
I think the problem is you got to go from 18 to 21 illegally drinking Jack Daniels and going, I want to be cool in front of my friends. And then force down the thing to finally be able to, at 30-some-odd, be able to drink bourbon and go, yeah,
that
I
Jack
like this.
Daniels is gross. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's just gross. You
There's
know
a reason that 17-year-olds are like, I love Jack Daniels. Because they have no idea what they're talking about.
I mean, I've taken some scope to the eye before I drink that stuff again. I mean, it's just bad, man.
Would you like a shot of JD or some pepper spray? I'll take the pepper spray.
Do you got any soda? I'll take soda and pepper spray. Can I mix them?
I'll petition the Lord on that. I said, Lord Jesus, Mike would like to be more of the world. Can you help him?
How do you know
the way that he said that? I don't think you're going to win on that
one. I feel like Jesus, he made bourbon, didn't he? I mean, he allowed it to come to pass. Allowed good Christian men.
He also drank wine, Mike.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. You don't see Jesus taking wine in Galilee. You know what I'm saying? Pharaoh catting it up. He seems to be able to muscle
he
one down.
He was used to it because they drank it all the time.
Well, so I need to become more of a bourbon man.
You have clean water at your disposal. They may not have said the same thing.
Wait a minute. You're saying they distilled bad water, making it into wine? That was the fix?
Here's the deal. That's how monks got into it.
I was going to say, that's kind of how it went, man. Yeah, you're going to lose that argument real quick.
Yeah, yeah. Most of you travel Europe anywhere like post 400. Like, monasteries are brewing beer because it's cleaner than the water.
What? That's where most alcohol came from, was this is a better life choice than anything else.
That sounds like the stupidest rationale. Couldn't they get boil the water just as easy as they could boil the beer?
It lasts longer. Hops and such. I don't know.
Hops and such?
Yeah.
Ben had it up to this point, and then he went, what goes in beer?
This hops and such. Ben says hops and such. Booba gives an eyebrow raise. Well, close the book on that one. That's got to be the deal.
They double team you, bro.
You know, I just
you can't beat the hops and brow. You can't beat that.
All I wanted to do is hang out with my bros and talk about my bourbon, and you guys are all like, listen, Nancy, man, go back to your soda water.
I feel like, did I hear Nick Harris over here is like trying to offer you Jägermeister? Is that a better route?
What?
I'm not sure. I was just
asking. Oh, was he?
You go from, wait, hold up. Are you offering him Jaeger? That's a horrible life choice.
He didn't say no. He was just like, man.
I mean, maybe Red Bull will help.
Yes. Yeah, so what he's offering you now is called a Jaeger bomb.
That sounds like
it's a bomb you would place into your own stomach.
No, see, this is what I'm saying.
A bomb.
This is what I'm saying. If you have to add something you like to something because you don't like it, just drink the thing.
Ben is not a proponent of the mixed drinks.
That's what I'm saying. I need the straight bourbon.
Yeah,
give me something smooth, Booba. Give me the best stuff you have.
Dude, it's expensive.
Yeah, don't give me all of it.
Give Mike your expensive brew.
All right. I'll figure something out and get you something that's...
Put it in a paper bag so people don't know what it is.
That's true.
I'm going to show up at your house, hand you a paper bag of something, and your lady and kids are going to be like, what's Dad doing right now?
If you could wear a trench coat or whatever when you drop it off, that'd be the best.
I'll show up real shady-like. It'll be great.
Yeah, actually, if you could shoot something on your way in wearing a cowboy hat, that'd really sell it.
Actually,
bourbon.
I bet you'd get in a lot more interesting conversations if you constantly carried around like a bottle of Sam's Choice distilled water in a brown paper bag.
Yeah, right on.
And like took a pull off it.
That's
like,
a very valid point.
Here's the deal: you can either go looking for guys who go find interesting conversations, or they will come to you if you can just carry the right thing around with you.
You know what? Put that up on the Facebook poll, Ben. You know how much I love Facebook. Should Mike drink good bourbon? I don't want that cheap bourbon. Here's the thing. I really wanted to buy the expensive bourbon because I'm like, I don't want to hate it because I bought the cheap stuff. Maybe I should buy the expensive stuff.
To you right now, it's the exact same thing as Jack Daniels.
Oh, yeah.
That's the exact same face you would make.
Jack Daniels.
You would still go, it does not matter if you spend $90 on a bottle or five.
All I can imagine when I bought that Jack Daniels is like I would drink it, make that face, and then Sam Elliott across the way going, why don't you put a dress on and drink some? Why are you such a woman? Why don't you drink that whiskey like a man? Stupid TV.
Mike wants to exist in the Old West, I think.
I could be all right. I'm telling you, I can burst into a saloon like no one's business. Y'all ain't even give me a chance. I know what you think in this scenario.
How many buildings have you walked into that had the double swinging doors?
You don't follow me around. I do it everywhere. Every time I see double doors, I kick them open with my boot, and I'm like, yeah.
Is there some kind of like sweet piano playing
right now?
I
say, deal me in, and then I say the guy at the piano is going to die in the next 5 minutes. It always happens every time I walk in somewhere.
That's true. Since the age 8, Mike has been putting quarters and random change into shoes so they make like a spur sound when he walks around.
Ching, ching.
We're going to get you Live from the Past sponsored spurs for your boots.
Hey, are those legal? Can you wear spurs around all the time?
They were all over the place. This could sound really bad, but they were all over the place in San Antonio.
Yep. Spurs and bourbon. That's all that goes on down there.
Hey, they got a team called the Spurs. Just a heads up. No, like legitimately, when I was in San Antonio, people wore spurs. It was ridiculous. I thought it was a joke.
Are spurs just exempt because they've been around? Or like, can I wear a suit coat with knives protruding from the elbow?
You should be able to do the boot kick thing where you actually have a knife that sticks out the front of your boot.
Like a roadhouse.
It's basically the same thing as your spurs.
Yeah. See, he was a bourbon man. He cleared a whole bar out of troublemakers.
Roadhouse?
Roadhouse.
No.
What?
No. What? Never mind. No, okay. No, yeah, but spurs are a real thing.
All right. Anyway, next week, chapter 2 in Mike's vision of like how to look great in the eyes of the world.
Hey, I'm drinking this bourbon by myself in my house.
Mike's like, I really want to try out man buns.
No, you're right. That's not lame at all.
Hey, the cat don't judge me like you guys do. I just want to drink a little bourbon here and there.
All right. You live in this thing Live from the Path. Here's the deal. There's a there's a company in Wisconsin that is offering to implant remote control microchips in its employees.
Yeah. Mm.
Remote control microchips in its employees. Would you ask an employee to get a microchip implanted in her hand? Asks the Washington Post. Sounds invasive and intrusive, but come August 1st, one company in Wisconsin will be giving it a try. Three Square Market, a developer of software used in vending machines, is offering all of its employees the option to get a microchip implanted between the thumb and forefinger. It's quick, painless, and the company will even pick up the $300 fee. And don't worry, there's no GPS tracking capability. Ominous dot dot dot. Yet. The company is expecting 50 of its employees to voluntarily sign up for the implants. What do you think? What do you think, Bova? You in on this thing?
So what is it for?
It's a chip. Okay, it allows those employees who volunteer to participate in the program to open doors, pay for purchases, share business cards, store medical information, and pay for stuff at other RFID terminals and log into their computers, all with the wave of one hand.
Only at that place of business.
Yeah.
That sounds dumb. What if you get fired? Then you're out like a surgery.
Yeah, or you just leave it in there.
And I'm pretty sure it still got tracking on there. Like,
yeah, Nick Harris ain't buying this story.
I'm on the same page as that. There's no way that there's not any tracking ability to this at all. And like, there's got to be something creepy. Here's the deal: you're a grown person, make your own choice. Would I do it? No.
Wait a minute, you can't track RF signals.
No, you can't. It's like the card I used to get in. But Bova, you've worked in corporate America. Right?
I get it. No, I understand.
They can't follow
I get
your
the point
card around.
However, but that doesn't mean 20 years from now they can't.
Well, right, but unless they upgrade the chip.
I don't know what's going to happen. I'm saying I wouldn't because there's no real reason for it.
Is that
if I could still have a work badge and a password, I'm going to still do that.
I mean, is that zip cord that bad of a deal?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I wore a lanyard with a neck badge for 7 years. I looked like an idiot, but sometimes I'd forget to take it off and I'd go out with friends and look like that cool corporate guy that's like, hey, everybody, want to come work where I work?
I'm here at the 10% discount because I'm with Will Fargo.
You see the badge? Yeah, that means I'm in here.
Give me a mixed drink.
I got a sweet pin on it that says number one in customer service. I don't see the point of doing it. It seems unnecessary. You're trying to be way too technological and cool. It's pointless now.
Well, it's a matter of convenience, but you're saying the convenience ain't worth it.
Yeah, it's not.
I want to type in the password. I want to carry the card around. I don't want easy access to paying for stuff on the vending machine.
Right.
I mean,
I'm the last person that needs that. You should not make vending machines easier for me. You should make them more difficult. You should put a chip in my hand that means that they don't work within 20 feet of
me. It's a veggie vendo, Bova.
That doesn't matter.
Carrot sticks.
Bring my
other
friggin' carrots.
Yeah.
You know that's going to be the baby carrots. You should eat whole carrots in the first place.
Isn't there, I guess I don't know that much about RF signals, right? But like, how hackable are these things? Can't dudes just produce the same RF signal on a plastic card and break in if they want?
I think that's one of the. I don't think it happens often, but I think that's one of the big things against RF chips or those badges is that like within the range of like what it transmits, which you're right is small.
You know what? This is a bunch of crap because really the onus is on the company to get this done. If they would just switch over to fingerprint scanners, ain't no one have to get surgery of any kind. It's really just cheaper for them to put RF chips in everybody.
That's a good point.
But I mean, if they can put fingerprint scanners on there, I'm gonna take this thumb with me everywhere I go until. some cowboy hawk it off there. And so I should be able to use it to get into any type of door I want.
I had pocket aces.
I just think it's a deeper, I think it's real deeper than, you know, just getting into work. Like, I think, like, they trying to crack codes and do stuff. Like, okay, think about it like this. Not the same.
All right, hold up.
We need a theme music for Nick Harris's spins on the crazy conspiracies of life. Go ahead, Nick Harris.
I mean, it could be something like they trying to, something about DNA. Didn't Jesus say, like,
careful.
The blood is, I am. The blood, your blood brings life, basically, right? Like, the flesh, well, the blood is the life, basically. You know, like, blood is what give the flesh life. You know, like, if you think about it real deep.
Or you connect two dots that don't belong anywhere close to each other. Either way.
Yeah, like, I just feel like, look at, I already know Ben over there. Like, what
Let's
is he
going
to say now? But it's just, I just think it's deeper than that. I think, like, they just really trying to mess with DNA.
On a vending machine level? Like, the vending machine company's
That's
the front.
That's how it starts.
Hey, here's the deal. Nick Harris, like, if you're going to have... So what you're proposing is they are the dumbest people alive, right? The hospital has your blood, right?
Yeah.
Like, wait, so get into the hospital.
Did you choose Thriller?
Why would they do it so foolishly?
Because people are cheap. I mean, if you be like, yeah, I'll let you put a tip in my hand, and I don't really, I'm going to tell you what to do. But
Harris, you're going to have to use a microphone, brother.
Oh, yeah, look, okay. Just think, like, everybody are cheap, right? So if somebody comes to you proposing something that only they know more about, like, in depth, saying like, oh, you won't, it'll do this, that, and the third, and you like, okay, it'll be make it easier for me for the next 10 hours at work. You're gonna go through surgery to be at work for 10 hours to just press the button and go in.
So
like,
I'm not disagreeing with that. The story that you told that was akin to zebras flying in and stealing meat out of my freezer, which is those weird dots you were connecting, I'm not on board with. But like the thought of, hey, this makes this basic thing easier. Why would I go through the problem of putting this in here? Like, I get that.
But
I'm just saying if you like.
Deeper.
What are they going to do, Nick Harris? Like, what's the end game of this guy? Let's say
it could be DNA.
Okay, they got my DNA. So what? I spit on the ground all the time. They can go harvest it.
But we don't know the effects that it'll have on you over time.
What do you think is going to happen?
I don't know. God knows. Just think, like, people didn't know if you put a cell phone in your ear that the friction is just over the years. Like, oh.
I mean, your hair's still growing, Harris. You use a cell phone all the time.
It is, but it's a known fact that, you know, if you have, like, just doing this and messing with this technology, it cripples you over time.
You still have it, though.
Of course.
Because you took the surgery. That's but, what you, because you still got the phone in your pocket.
But I talk on speakerphone since I You can't lay with it on your chest.
I love it.
You got to find loopholes around this stuff.
Nick Harris, I love you, man. Here's the deal. I love you. I completely disagree with 90% of the stuff you're saying right now, but I love that speakerphone. I dig that.
All right.
They say 90%.
90% of what you're... No, that's a complete arbitrary number. That's not true.
It just means that I have a package of tinfoil in my car, and I've been making hats for the
last
3 months.
Here's the deal. I agree with the fact that, yes, that seems ridiculous. Don't get a chip in where you could just put in a password. That's stupid. But having some weird thing about like being fearful of someone having your DNA, like, that's messed up, man. Like, there's no reason to have that. You don't actually have a logical reason to think that the government, even if you have thoughts against the government or a corporation having your DNA, that they're going to somehow clone you and make some doppelganger that goes out and commits crimes so you get in trouble for it. Like, that's a science fiction movie come to life,
man. I didn't mean they take and use your DNA. I just mean, like, they can change your DNA. Like, stuff is... Like, that's the hardest thing that they don't know, you know, like, so it's like they'll use any and everything to figure it out. These people want to be gods, so, I mean, it's not really that far-fetched for me. Like, I can see, like, this the beginning of things happening, times changing. Like, the more that they put this stuff out here and just see who will, you know, try to fetch it, and okay, yeah, we can try this. And work on this next, like, you know, like, but, I mean, I just feel like they trying to play the role of God, basically. Like, this the beginning. Like, I know you guys heard about the mosquitoes they putting out, like, in California, like, the little robot mosquitoes.
No.
Yeah,
no, I've not
mean,
heard about that
up.
Either.
I mean, look it up.
You know,
like nanobots?
We can look it up. Yeah, like basically little robot mosquitoes that they just gonna.
Nick Harris, what's the top three places you get your news from?
I got sourceful information. Like, I mean, I can bring it up to you.
I mean, I subscribe to robotmosquitoes.com.
it actually was in the news, but I mean, like.
I mean, I read a ton of news, Harris. I have a corporate job. I waste a lot of time reading news, and yeah. I never seen anything about no robot mosquitoes.
What's the point of the robot mosquitoes? Now I'm intrigued, Nick Harris. What do the robot mosquitoes do?
They basically inject you with something that, you know, like, it's supposed to be like a, what do you call it? It's something like,
a serum.
Something of that sort. But, you know, like, to make you immune to something, basically.
So it's like a vaccination?
Yeah, sort of like that, yes.
So it's a forced vaccination by robot mosquitoes?
Yeah, well, actually, California.
I mean... I wonder how much
Nick Harris, that is not at all what's going on.
What are they saying?
You're not describing the situation at all. So they are they're using a machine to breed mosquitoes.
That's not the same as robot mosquitoes.
Oh man. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe you stumbled on the wrong robot mosquito.
Scientists may combat the world's mosquito problem by unleashing millions more of them. To help solve the problem, researchers at the science company Verily, it's a Google company, created an automated lab that raises infertile mosquitoes and infects them with the naturally occurring sterilizing bacteria called Wolbachia. The idea is that the female mosquitoes will then produce eggs that can neither develop nor hatch. If it works, we could someday live in a world that's completely eradicated of all mosquitoes harboring dangerous illnesses. I would agree on its face that I don't like them toying with the biology of the mosquito.
Yeah, that's messed up.
That is them playing God, and I agree.
However, that's not even close to your description of some sort of infestation of, like, robot mosquitoes.
Yeah, it was.
You got to read more closely. Stay in the microphone, Nick Harris. It's on the radio.
I seen something about the robot mosquitoes, too, but you just happened to ran across that one, too, but... And I seen that one, too, but...
Hold on, I mean, like...
Hey, man, if you could find that, let us...
Robot Mosquito California brings up, I mean, a ton of responses, which is all that one same thing. So maybe you see if you can find it, or you come back and say, you know what, I need to read the article a little more closely before I start talking about robot mosquitoes.
Because now I legit want to know about these robot mosquitoes.
Yeah, I'm going to bring it up.
All right.
Because, like, no making funny, I legit want to know about these robot mosquitoes now.
Yeah, because I do a lot of research on things. I don't take everything again, like being making
You're not. No. There's no way you're easily taking my story.
He'll be the first one. Like, hold on, Nick Harris. I don't think that should be healthy for you.
Well, dang, Harris has got me paid.
Yep.
I do say that.
Robot mosquitoes. So long story short on these RF chips, first of all, like, I don't understand anybody's – I mean, how lazy can you be? And second of all, like, this change is easily made with fingerprint scanners. They can do it with technology that's available. You can buy it today. It's ready to go, prepackaged. It's just cheaper to get RF chips installed in people.
Now, to fight the whole how lazy can you be thing, I get it. Like, I understand wanting to do it. Like, when you work in a call center or anything corporate, you put your password in 100 times a day, easily. Mm-hmm. You lock your computer to go to the bathroom. You lock your computer to walk down the hallway. You lock your computer to leave your room. And it's obnoxious to type your password.
Go talk to the guy that's lifting concrete blocks 80,000 a day.
Agree. No,
right? You know,
agree.
Like, I got to put my password in.
I'm not saying that. Here's the deal. That's why I'm not built to do concrete work. Like, I was not built to be that guy. I would pass out and die. I have nothing but respect for somebody who can do that kind of labor all day, every day. I'm saying, from the perspective of it's a pain in the butt, I get it. Now, there is a degree of laziness to that. You're right. However, the person who works at a call center is not inherently lazy compared to the person that works concrete. Two different jobs.
Until they start complaining about how often they got to put their password in.
I get that, but at the same point in time, I guarantee you most of the dudes that I know that do concrete could not come in and do my job. I could not do their job. They could not do my job. We're just wired differently.
I think they're not interested in it.
Yeah. At the same point, neither am I. I'm super excited that I get to drive on your concrete. I just don't care how it gets there.
I guess what I'm saying is...
Hold on. Just a point of clarity. So I come from a similar background as Booba, and I couldn't disagree more with what he's saying. I would say most people would not... Well, I would agree with Mike. Most people wouldn't want to do the job. It's not their notion of in... Like, it's not a physical ability.
Right.
That's
I guess what I'm saying...
Oh, I'm saying my physical ability. I couldn't freaking do it. I'd pass out and die.
I guess what I'm saying is, like, I know dudes that lay block for a living, right? And, like, they don't get halfway through the day and go... Man, I got to lay more block.
Fair enough.
I'm tired of laying block. You know what I'm saying? Like, over a lifetime, they're like, I hate block. You know, but, like, the same guy, like, will go into an office and be like, a password again, password again. Oh, I gotta get a password to get into this system. They're like, I can't believe the hard times that have come my way. You know? And there's a guy out there, like, picking up block at 12:30 right after lunch and goes, back to the block.
Right.
And there he is, laying more block. Fair and he's enough. Not shocked and awed at the amount of block that keeps showing up.
Here's the deal. It's like you, it starts to change your life when you recognize how much that stuff exists in your day-to-day. I ran into that more and more when I would go into the break room and try to get some coffee, and like the coffee's out, right? And like, you know, some weasel's gone in there taking the last of the coffee and skirted out of there so he didn't have to remake the coffee. And like, I would get pissed.
Yeah.
I'd be like, dang, I got to go to a meeting and we're out of coffee and I don't want to have to stop and make this coffee. And there was a day about 5 years ago when I thought, you're the coffee man. This goes to the conversation we're having before the show started, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I just don't assume anybody else makes coffee. I just assume I'm the coffee man. So whenever I go in there, if it's low or whatever, I think, oh, good, I need to replace the coffee. I'm responsible. And I've not had that problem since.
I've been happy ever since. There's always coffee available.
Yeah.
I suppose that's a valid point. I can dig on that.
It's always available, and I'm never mad at anybody else. I just assume that it's my issue.
Huh.
It simplifies life. Yeah, it says, this program is also meant to be a real-life opportunity for Westby's company to test and expand the technology for its own products. We see this as another payment and identification option that not only can be used in our markets, but out other self-checkout and self-service applications that we are now deploying, which include convenience stores and fitness centers, said another company executive. A Swedish organization named Epicenter began doing the same thing early this year, and its workers seem to love it. People ask me, are you chipped?
What?
Hey, man.
That's ridiculous.
Mike, I feel like this we should all quit our call center jobs and just go lay block.
Yeah.
Because
like
we'd never go up to – you probably never hear, hey, man, you chipped today?
Hey, man, you chipped?
You blocked today? Yeah.
Like, man, I'm pretty chipped.
Feeling chipped.
Hey, Lil Wayne is going to grab onto this and make something out of it.
Oh, man, here's the thing. You know, though, it's the guy who gets the chip is a real pompous jerk about it for about 3 weeks when someone wants to go pay or whatever. He's like, nah.
I got it.
And he waves his hand in front of the deal.
Just, yeah, what are you, some kind of credit magician?
Just wait till that chip don't work, right? Instead of going down to the security office and be like, I need a new card. This one's junk. You sit and be like, I got to replace my hand. He's standing right in front of the door, waving at it like a knock-kneed doofus. Come on, man.
That is what I would have much fun with. I would like the new employee to come in on the one day the chip reader isn't working, and so everybody's just standing in front of the door doing the wax-on, wax-off thing.
There's
and everybody's
80 people
confused.
Trying to wave the thing open. Looks like a Village People video.
And the one dude that doesn't have the thing yet walks up with his badge. Morning.
Beep. That's right. It's the one-eyed man. You know what I'm saying? You know who rules in a power outage? The janitor. Because he's got hard keys to everything. He's going in and out. Everybody laughs at him all year, cleaning up poop, you know, getting the vomit taken care of, fixing light bulbs. And then when the power goes out, here comes Johnny the janitor letting himself in every door that was ever made because he got the key.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
There's nothing that will emasculate you more than trying, as an example of that currently exists in most office buildings, is trying to get the automatic water, the faucet, to participate with you. Like, you put your hand underneath, and you're a privileged dude making 50 plus a year begging for water in the corporate sink.
Why is this not working?
And it gives it to you for 7 seconds or whatever it is, and it's not enough. And then you put your hand underneath there, and there's always like a 3 second delay. And so you're like, you're moving your hand, re begging again that water will be delivered.
One of the machines worked to give me soap. Pen I need the other one
water.
To work too.
Yeah, I mean, it's and here's the deal: is like it is. It gives you, it doesn't even paint the right picture of how pathetic you look waving your hand trying to get this thing to play ball with you in the bathroom as your like soaped up hands are not giving you another 8 seconds worth of water that you want. And then you go over to the towel dispenser, which is made of the same material that they use to make balloons. Like, it has no absorption capability at all. So you go through like 10 towels to try to dry off your hands, and you end up wiping it on your pants.
It really is. You wait.
Technology has failed me and my pants again.
So this actually cracked me up because at my work they tried this, right? They put a bunch of automatic dispensers in.
Yeah.
And them boys don't have no tolerance for that. Those things were taken apart in 3 days. The covers are gone. People are robbing as many towels as they want. You know what I'm saying? The soap dispenser bag is out. People are hand squeezing it. They have no tolerance for this at all. Because you'd go in there and be like, my hands are wet. And one would come out. You're like, what is this for? Like, if I shed a tear because there's an onion in the room, I can't get anything done with this thing. I just got done rebuilding an engine. I'm covered head to toe with dirt, and you're like, and this like 8x11 sheet of whatever comes out, you're like, no.
I have tools to take apart that engine. I have tools to take apart this dispenser.
Yeah, and it was too. It was gone. Cover's missing. Now there's just rolls. Just people just rolling all day like a Mardi Gras paper towel. People don't put up with that crap for nothing.
So here's the difference to where Mike works and where I work. I go into the bathroom at work 3 weeks ago, and the water in the middle faucet is like pouring out. There's something wrong with the automatic dispenser, right? It's coming out. And like someone has gone to their desk and got a sticky note, and it says, maintenance has been called, and then puts the sticky note above the sink. And like, there's no telling how long this thing's been spewing water. And I looked around, and like, I mean, this is full of dudes here, right? And so I get underneath there and I turn the water off. There has to be a shut off for the water, yeah? And so I'm like, the maintenance guy will figure out that I shut it off, right? But I thought, like, what kind of white collar looks by this thing and the water's just streaming? I was like, I've got this handled. Calls the maintenance man. Well, there's no desk near this thing. So he's had to walk, 4 minutes back to his desk, found a sticky note, wrote it down, self-satisfied, puts this note above the thing and walks away. I'm like, just turn off the water. What the heck? Oh, I called a guy.
Yes. He's on his way.
I called one of the guys that works with Mike. He's going to come out and help us out.
Here he comes with his 85 keys. Ching, ching, ching. What's up here?
Hey, Earl, you want to help us out?
Actually, the same thing happened. There was like 2 years ago. Someone's complaining, like, there's only cold water coming out of the faucets. Did someone call maintenance man? And I went in there and I'm like, there's a hot, it's like a normal sink. There's a little thing in front of it, right? But if you look down in there, there's two pipes that are coming in. So I just turned up the hot water and I had hot water again. I thought, done.
That's right on.
Done.
There's only hot water coming out of the sink. What are you bathing in there? You know what I'm saying? You're just washing your hands. You have to do it in the lap of luxury. Just on your way done from going to the poop. You're like, I got to have a luxurious hand washing. Give me 87 degrees. What's wrong with you?
There's got to be some social experiment within there to find out what kind of people have the agency to fix something and who have the ability to just go, I called the maintenance guy.
Actually, now here's the deal. That's generally the hero of the office, the guy who actually bothers to call the maintenance man. 15 guys came in and out that thing and thought someone else will handle this, right? And walked away from it.
No, that's true.
Someone will save that dying person. No worries.
Yeah, the one guy that called the maintenance man, he's the best we can do. He's the top of the line, the hero of the office.
Employee of the month should be who called the maintenance guy.
That's right. And with Sean called maintenance 18 times this week, everybody get up for Sean.
Great job, Sean. Great job,
Sean.
Man, did you beat your record of last month of 15?
Yeah, sure did.
Yeah. To be honest, I broke a couple things just so I'd call them.
It was coming close to the month, and I wanted to make sure I really won that record, so I snapped the faucet in half.
Thanks, all you guys, for signing that card. That's
you're the
sweet.
Best.
I wanted to call facilities on the coffee, but Ben keeps making it. I can't call anybody.
It's always there.
I like to get Mary up here to take a look and see what's all going with the coffee pot.
I've literally washed my hands with caustic chemicals. Because there's no sink around, right? You know what I'm saying? People are like, it's not warm enough.
Hey, man.
I've sprayed Windex on my hand, and I rubbed them around, and on the pants, and off you go.
Mike, I care about you as a brother. Stop worrying about this friggin' bourbon deal.
I should take
You're doing just fine, all right? You do not need to figure out some other level of manliness. You're just fine. Nope.
Okay, so one time I actually washed my hands in a parts washer. And that's some really caustic stuff. And I didn't realize that's what it was, but I was rebuilding a tire machine or something. It was really dirty. And like, I got to get stuff on my hands. And like, there's a parts washer that you put like car parts in, clean them all up before you put them back on. And man, it's acidic, nasty business.
I'm
washing my hands in it.
Singing happy birthday
some
to me to make sure I got it right.
Some dude comes around and goes, we have hand cleaner here. I'm like, well, it's like a faucet. And he goes, that's a parts washer. You can't use that to wash your hands. You'll get cancer. I'm like, I'm already on the way. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think I was smoking a pack a day at the time. And, so I'm like, parts washer, cigarettes, whatever.
Okay. Legitimately, here's the deal. I drink bourbon. But I also, the most manly thing I did recently was I refilled my antifreeze. Like, that's what I got on my list. I need to be able to drink bourbon and go, yeah, that was good stuff. You don't need that much.
I'll trade you, Booba. You give me some bourbon, and then I'll bring you some Windex.
I like this. All right.
Sound like a deal.
A disciplinary panel of the Episcopal Church has recommended that a California bishop be suspended for 3 years for trying to sell a congregation's property to a townhouse developer without its permission. Here's the reason I was drawn to this story. Does this seem like the punishment fits the crime?
What?
We're going to have to let you go.
Yeah, for 3 years. See you in 2021.
Yeah, this man was a bishop. I mean, like, let's just call him the pastor of the church.
You say, isn't that
without telling anybody, he decides to try to sell the church property to a townhouse development. And, like, and the panel gets together and goes, you know what? 3-year suspension. And I think to myself, this is not harsh enough.
Right.
This man, this should be gone. There's no reason to retain his thing here. Mm-hmm. Like, this is preposterous behavior.
Yeah, we're going to have to let you go on that one.
Actually, like, on multiple levels, right? Like, let's say that your position as bishop, let's say it's your job.
Yeah.
Right? This is your job. These are your job duties. Well, you failed at that. You're basically stealing from the company.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Okay, so A, you're fired. You should never work here again. Okay, let's say, well, he works for a church. It's not a legit job, right? But it's position. he's been given a position by God. Yeah. In a leadership position. Well, you're not really following God. You're trying to sell this property outright for cash money and why screwing over everyone that goes in your congregation. So, 1 Corinthians 5 style, you're gone.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think there's a pretty sweet word Paul uses that's basically do not associate with that man anymore. Cinnamonogamy.
So, long story short, I'm not sure what my Episcopal criteria that you've made of where a 3-year suspension does the deal, but like under logical standards, economical standards, and God standards, you're gone. Like you can't even step in a building.
Yeah. He says a hearing panel for the disciplinary board for bishops ruled 4-1. Someone says, nah, he's all right. last Friday, that the Reverend J. John Bruno should be suspended for 3 years and that the property of St. James the Great Church of Newport Beach remain in control of the congregation. Did they have to vote on that? Was it like, if they didn't say something, was like, well, we made a deal with the townhouse people. I suppose we got to let
it go. I mean, can I assume that they were going to knock it down and put up townhouses?
I was going to say, I doubt they would keep the church on the land. Like, the townhome place is like, we really like the scenery. We're going to keep that
How
there.
Did this dude think this was going to go down? He sells it and then, like, people show up next Sunday and the church is gone. And they're like, wow, I wonder what. Weird.
Yeah, up,
that looks like a couple townhomes.
Yeah. I think those are. Is that guy laying stone? More stone, huh?
Yeah. Laying black.
It is the decision and sentence of the hearing panel that Bruno is suspended for 3 years. During the period of his suspension, Bishop Bruno shall refrain from the exercise of the gifts of the ministry conferred by ordination. Interesting.
Man, a way to make church corporate.
And not exercise any authority over the real or personal property or temporal affairs of the church. After thorough and detailed consideration of facts, positions, contentions, testimony, and documents, the hearing panel has concluded that the scope and severity of Bishop Bruno's misconduct, as described above, have unjustly and unnecessarily disturbed the ministry of a mission of the church.
What?
The ruling went on to recommend that all efforts by the Episcopal Diocese of Los Angeles to sell St. James property must be halted and that the congregation retain control of the church. St. James the Great is a casualty of Bishop Bruno's misconduct acting as diocesan and corps sole. While it was beyond the authority and ability of the hearing panel to fully assess what might have happened if St. James the Great had been allowed to continue its ministry in its church facility, there is ample evidence of its viability and promise to convince the hearing panel that St. James the Great was robbed of a reasonable chance to succeed as a sustainable community of faith.
So I was watching a video this week by Francis Chan, and he was talking about the Chinese underground church, right? And he was explaining it to him, and he went over there to experience it or whatever, and then he tried to explain how the American church worked. He was trying to explain some of the differences between the American church and the way that the Chinese underground church is working. And he's like, they laughed out loud at me. Like, they literally laughed at me. And not even like a, ha, 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 that's a funny story, but how could you read this book and then end up doing that?
Yeah.
We read this book, we do this, you read this book, and you guys come up with this. And then these stories show up, and you're like, yes. Yes, not only were the Chinese underground church right to be laughing at us, but, like, it should sink in more.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that is the most ridiculous piece of information / news / a church body operating in a non-godly, non-God-honoring way. And even the structure and the disciplinary action, like, it's just a big pile of crap. Like, it doesn't mean anything to anybody. It's a bunch of words about non-committal things. Like, it's so stupid. It's laughable.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Like, how do you even digest, like, with real, like, legitimate gospel issues going on in the world, and we're like, yeah, we were having a real problem with our man trying to sell the building to some townhouse developers.
Yeah, we'll make him sit out of the property dealing business of our church, but he can retain his management stuff. Management of what? You're not even leading people.
Right.
You're not even leading the building. Your only job there is to not sell the building.
Yeah.
And you didn't do that.
So For fuller perspective, his position is that he is selling it for to cover legal costs, although it is not – they don't describe what the legal costs were. And so the next reasonable question is, why is the church incurring a bunch of legal costs
right.
that he has to sell the building to do it? And he says the congregation knew about it. Whatever disciplinary committee believes it, they obviously did not. So, like, even if he's making the case that it wasn't for financial gain, like, what have we gotten ourselves into that these are the things that we're spending our time on?
Yeah. Right? I can't think of a single situation in which I think the church needs to sue anybody. And if the church is getting sued and has a bunch of legal costs, well, there's something wrong there, too. What is going on in that situation? Like, we are called to make war. Like, legitimately, there are people that are dying that, like, have no idea who Jesus is. Or they know exactly who he is and don't friggin' care because they feel like the church has destroyed what we think Jesus is. And then we get stuff like this where the bishop is trying to sell the church and the land it is on to townhouse developers. And then the church gets together and spends actual time with each other from the perspective of, hey, we need to discipline this guy. No, you need to shut your mouths and you need to get out of that building. And you need to go love on people for Christ, because that's what you're called to do, not figuring that stuff out. I'm not saying there's not a place for discipline within church. That is biblical. There is stuff in there where if people are doing stuff in the church, you have to deal with it, and you have to deal with it in-house. That is exactly true. But if we are taking that to the point of, hey, we're going to make certain that this guy, our bishop, is going to be taken away from his ministry for 3 years where he cannot exercise any blah, 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 blah. Get out of your building, get off your butt, and go talk to someone about Jesus.
Yeah, here's the thing. Is like the truth of the matter is like, let's say that let's put it on the other foot for a minute. Let's say the church has some legit, they incurred legit costs, right? Like, they should be able to actually agree. Like, well, sell the building, I guess.
Yeah, right.
We'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Jesus does not exist within these walls only.
No.
All right.
Sell it. We got debts. We got to be honest to deal with. Whatever. Sell the place. You know, it shouldn't have been a deal. Like, the townhouse developer makes it sound like he was trying to skeeze his own personal gain or whatever.
Right.
Maybe the guy's just like, look, we got $40,000 in debts. We got nothing.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have any money in the coffers. We got a building. It's the only thing we can do. We got to pay our debts with something. We should sell the place and, you know, whatever. We'll meet in the park or we'll get this straightened out.
But he didn't tell anybody. Like, he did not have a single conversation with anybody about
weird.
That. Yeah. If it were a serious situation of the church has debts, Jesus does not only exist within the confines of this walls, God will figure out a way to still love on people and further his ministry without this building. Guys, we got to sell the place. We got to sell the place. We got to take care of our stuff. Let's go love on Jesus somewhere else. A loving and Christ-centered congregation would go, yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Let's get rid of this thing. This is just monetary stuff that we're holding on to. This is physical stuff we don't really need. We got to get out of this building anyway. Sell it. We'll figure it out. Let's meet at his house.
And I suppose, like, so there's two things that I had a reaction to in this particular story. The first one is like, I don't, if the man has otherwise not managed the property well, just be done with it, right? Like, whatever this disciplinary thing is, it seems overwrought. We should be, look, you're not faithful in the means. You can't lead people. You're gone. You may serve the Lord Jesus, but you can't do it in the capacity. You're not handling it right. The second one, though, was like, do we have the right mindset that says, like, let's put it this way. I'm going to change the situation a bit. Let's say you own a church and you don't have any debts. You own the church outright. Some guy comes in, falls in the parking lot, and then decides to sue you for $10 million, right? He's going to tie up your money and your time and your resources for 3 years. Let's say that you know that up front. Here's the thing. Like, do you fight that? Or if you say, look, I can't have what the Lord is doing be tied up for 3 years in this thing. I'm just going to give up and sell the building, pay the man off, and go do gospel work somewhere else.
I think that's awesome.
Is that I'm not saying that's always the right decision. I'm saying, does that cross your mind? Because that would cross my mind right away.
Yeah. Like,
I can't have this guy hog tying me. he's in the wrong. We're not. However, fine. I'll give you the money.
Sell the building. Take the $10 million.
Jesus says that's going to happen. We'll figure it out.
But here's the thing. Like, that's a classic conundrum because I wouldn't answer it the same way probably 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I would have said, look, you know, I can't have you dragging God's church through the mud acting like we don't take care of our parking lot. This is ridiculous, you know? We got to fight this thing. We got to prove we're right. And, like, I don't know. The more and more the gospel sets in and the more that talking to people about Jesus sets in, it's like, yeah, you know what? Sell it. Give them the money. Well, you know, fine. I can't be dealing with you for 3 years. You know how much time I'm going to waste trying to prove that we were right and we shoveled our walk correctly? To what end? Right? Like, I mean, every hour I've been at court could have been an hour that I was talking to somebody about Jesus, right. And I chose not to do it and get wrapped up with this.
Yeah, something to think about. I don't know. I don't know how I would answer that, but like I would want, I think, that perhaps it should be on the table. Have I limited my scope to say, you know what, the valuable thing I have is time and the ability to interact with people, and if this guy's going to soak up our time and money, I'm out. I'm out. I'll just pay it. It's worth more for me to be able to do something else.
Yeah.
Anyway, just a thought. You're listening to Life from the Path. Hey, here's one thing I want to talk about. Shoot, Mike, you got some Dear Life from the Path?
Do you want to talk about your one thing? Or?
Yeah, I'll talk about the one thing, and then we'll do like a Dear Life from the Path.
Okay.
And we got some other stuff we'll have to save for next week. So here's one of the things I was thinking about. We've been kind of taking a few weeks break from the show as other things were going on, and I was thinking to myself, like, what do we want to focus on here? Like, we have an opportunity to get together at least once a week and to talk about things that I feel like are important when it comes to living faithfully in service to Jesus. And one of the things that keeps coming up for me is a core belief that says good news changes the world. And I know that's true for people personally, and I know that's true for seeing the kingdom spread into the world and seeing communities change and lives change. But like, I also believe there is a tangible, on earth right now, benefit to good news. And how good news actually changes how you see people, how you see the world, how you solve problems. And says, like, we're going to act the way kingdom people act, and we're going to solve problems the way kingdom people solve problems, and we're going to recognize our responsibilities in light of that, being faithful to God in all things. And so I guess what that has done for me then is I start looking out around me and said, look, I still live in this world, right? One of the great mistakes of evangelism is to make it sound like welcome to the kingdom. Sit on your butt and wait it out until Jesus returns. That's your job. But like, it's not. Like, we're still part. We are ambassadors for Christ. It's still our responsibility to take good news to the world. And frankly, I believe that it changes the world completely for the good. And so, anyway, as we look out at the different problems of the day, the core question is like, what does it look like for good news to impact this situation? And not just from a salvation perspective. I grant that that is a strong thing that Jesus offers, and that is a fantastic thing. I just don't think – Tim Timmons said this in an interview we did with him like a year or two ago, is that it's not the entirety. Like, we're actually cutting the story short by that being the only thing we talk about. I actually think it changes how people look at the world and how we solve problems. So anyway, so like, if I look at the various issues that go on around the world and start asking the question, how does good news change this circumstance? How does the gospel help solve this problem? And so as an example, let's look at one of the things that we're debating in our country and likely will continue to for decades to come is government involvement and health care. A government caring for its citizens. To what extent is it responsible to care for its citizens? How does it use money? How does it use resources that they are taking from us from a tax perspective? How does it use the money? What type of influence does government have in regulating health care, in determining the type of care that people can have? And how do we ensure that otherwise people are being cared for who do not have the means to care for themselves? That is a relevant gospel question. And so my broad question looking at that topic would be, ignore the fact that we're talking about it from a political standpoint and that we're talking about it from a government standpoint. Take the core problem on its own. People who need help with their health, right? People who are sick, people who need to be cared for. And now from a gospel perspective, how does the good news help solve that problem? Not only in concept, but tangibly, what is the mission of the church? What is the outpouring of the way Jesus interacts with his creation and how he calls his people to behave? How does that affect that discussion, ignoring any other option, and just say, how does good news change that? And so that's my question to you. And it's a question that I'm going to keep asking, I think, over like a really wide swath of circumstances, is how does the good news impact how we deal with people's need for healthcare? How does the good news impact our concept of immigration, of abortion, of like whatever hot button problem or low level problem it is? Like, how does the good news actually help solve that problem? And then and this is where I need your help, because like, I don't know that I've thought of every way of which the good news of Jesus Christ impacts tangible problems that we're having today. So like, I'm going to propose that I'll post that on Twitter, and like, maybe you can help us out. Like, in what ways does the gospel help solve that problem? Okay. And then list them out tangibly. Maybe it's an example of this one might be, if we feel like this, the good news of the gospel is both a physical and spiritual thing, maybe it's churches should be trying to help people out for free, right? Can we provide means of which people can be cared for through the church? And if that's an answer, then the follow-up question is going to be, who is anybody doing that? Like, are we doing that? As a group of people following Jesus, are we actually – is the good news actually changing the world in this area? Are we living it out faithfully? And if it is because churches, for example, should be doing that kind of care, is there anybody doing it around here and can we talk to them? And if it's not happening, maybe we have the responsibility to be doing it. And so that's kind of my trajectory. And I this is going to take a long time, but I kind of want to start exploring the way good news changes the world in specific situations and intangible impacts and say, if we don't know that, if we can't answer that question, we shouldn't be voting on it. We shouldn't be prescribing how a government otherwise impacts that or a different organization or groups of people have it wrong. If we can't look at the situation and say, this is how the gospel actually prescribes or otherwise speaks to how this situation should get solved either by God or through the church or whatever it is. And so if we can answer that question, then I think we can informed now say, good, now that I know that answer, to what extent should the government be involved? To what extent can I accept that other organizations can help out because we know the right answer from a gospel perspective? And so, sorry, that was a long-winded way to describe this, but here's where I want your help. Is we're going to pick a circumstance or situation, and I want you to help us answer, how does the gospel, how does the good news change that circumstance or help with that circumstance or aid in how we look at it? And then as we can compile those answers, we can start going line by line and saying, if that is true, if the church is supposed to change or if the gospel helps us look at this differently or whatever it is that happening? Is anybody doing that? And can we talk to them? Can we learn what they're doing? If it's supposed to be done and they're doing it, can we support it? Can we send them money? Can we volunteer for it? Can we give them resources? And if it's not happening and it should be, who are we to not be part of making it happen? And so it's a way to – frankly, it's a way for us to look at the world and say the good news should be changing the world. And if it's not changing in this way, we should be doing it. And how do we get on board doing it? So I want to explore that with you guys over however long it takes. It's probably going to be a never-ending type of thing. But I think it will expand the types of people that we're talking about, help us to understand the different ways in which good news is actually changing the world so that we know it. Because I think there's an ignorance to how we see these types of things. I think we're not aware of people that are doing – those types of things, and then we don't know that we can support them, we don't know that we can be part of it, and we don't know that it's missing so that we can start and be part of the work that's not occurring. So anyway, that's and healthcare is going to be that's what we'll do for this week. I'll post it on Twitter, and the question to you guys is help us think through what our ideas here. How does the gospel, how does the good news impact the liability of healthcare on a citizenry? And then let's go from there, and then we'll sniff it out from there. Does that make sense?
It does to me.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
Booba's not getting it.
Here's the deal,
I'm lost.
I'm going to give you expanded remarks on this.
I said you
hey,
email.
Man, I don't think I have time for that.
Me and Booba look over a cup of bourbon.
Yeah, no, I think a little alcohol will help that conversation.
A warm glass.
So, anyway, I'll try to figure out a more succinct way to say that so that you have something you can react to. But, like, I'll give it a shot. If you guys would be willing to help us out, at least with that discussion, and maybe it's to say, look, it's the gospel doesn't impact that. It's a simple government problem. Help me understand why, and then you know it's something we can discuss. But like, I don't want your opinion on how the government should fix it, though. It's not the point. The point is how does the good news influence how we look at this particular issue?
I got $5 that it gets missed, and it goes to government only.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that will happen, and.
To shame.
Maybe our responsibility is to keep pushing back on that. It's like, let's ignore that aspect of it for now. Let's say that we don't have – that's not an option. Because what we're asking is, how do I look at it? And then I can understand how to solve it and what resources are out there to do it. But like, if we don't know how to look at it right, we're never going to come up with the right resources. We're being dependent on the resources available to tell us how to look at something. And that's the false dichotomy. It's a false perspective. And so I want to make sure that, like, can I run these things through a gospel lens? And then I know what I'm dealing with. Okay, anyway, that's the thought.
Dear Life from the Path, our son-in-law, Brody, has a very different lifestyle than ours and the one in which we raised our daughter. I pointed it out to her while they were dating, and she was not pleased. I decided to say no more and try to accept him as best as possible, although I admit my husband has been better at it than I have. One thing that continues to bother us is that whenever we invite them out for dinner, Brody will order the most expensive thing on the menu. He also has a couple of drinks, upgrades his salad, and orders dessert. By the time he's done, the cost of his meal is double that of everyone else's. Although we can afford it, we feel this is bad manners. I'm not sure if he's trying to take advantage of us or if he just thinks he's entitled. Our daughter thinks he's wonderful and doesn't seem to mind that he does this. I worry that it may reflect badly on her when they are out with others. Is this acceptable? Do we grin and bear it? Or should we say something? And if so, what do we say? Hey, you don't know how to take people out to dinner.
Yeah, stop it.
I mean, just because you've been skimming it the last 10 years, what's your problem?
Your hospitality does not need to end at a certain dollar amount. Like, if you want that person to go out, then you either have to be the schmuck that goes, now, Brody, remember, we're taking you out, and this is on us, so make sure that you're ordering the bare-bones menu. Or you learn how to friggin' be hospitable and just go, okay, well, that's who he is, that's what he wants, that's what I'm paying for. I mean, I'm not saying you have to get taken advantage of everywhere you go, but, like, shut up.
Here's the thing. Like, if Brody goes out to eat with just him and your daughter, and he orders the same stuff,
and then buys it for himself.
That's Brody just being Brody.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, you got to give the man a little wiggle room. And I'm sorry that you've been paying to have someone else make your food and then getting the bare bones. I mean, when we go out to eat, I'm like, you know what? Get soda, everybody.
We're already spending the money. We might as well splurge.
Just well get soda. I mean, it's going to be $25 or it's going to be $45. I don't care. We're not eating at home. So you guys want to split a cake with me or something? You know?
I mean, who wants dessert?
Going out to eat's kind of a deal, you know? Right. And so, like, you've been paying other people. You've been basically paying an increased price for bologna sandwiches. Like, what's wrong with you? You're going to go out to eat? Go out to eat. You know, do good things. God created good and awesome things. And why don't you do that? Well, you ruined going out to eat. Instead of going twice a week, just go once and go to a good place and get something to eat.
And on top of that, it is not your job as the woman's parent to point out more things bad about her husband. Like, it is not your job to go, hey, if you haven't considered something awful about Brody, let me throw it in your face and see if I can cause more marital problems.
Yeah, how do you say?
That's not how you fix crap.
How do you say, dear life from the path, we've raised our daughter to be very, very worried about what other people think, especially when out to eat. And this Brody doesn't seem to give a crap. How do we fix that?
That's how they make it seem, like, when he do it, like, he could do it in an obnoxious way. Like, you know, like, hey, let me get that.
Yeah.
You never know, like. It's a respectable way to do things, and then it's a disrespectful way to do things.
Well, I mean, do you think they're like, hey, you know, that comes with the side salad, and he's like, upgrade my salad, large.
He could just feel comfortable. He could just be content with the situation and know that they do have the money or, you know, to take care of that. But like you said, go back to if he do those things on his own, like if he goes out and with his own money and do the same thing, then I don't think it's really a problem.
I mean, how would you know that? Are you going to ask him? Brody, do you die like a king on your own dime?
I'm pretty sure they got the number one source, the daughter.
Yeah, that's right. Does Brody do this everywhere? Yeah.
Brody, well, when was the last time you got the 24-ounce T-bone steak?
Yeah. The last time I went out.
He could be a big boy. He could got an appetite. Like, you don't know.
Hey, man, I'm a big boy. I do not get that 24-ounce T-bone steak.
Do you try to tone your order down based on who you're out to dinner with?
No, but I don't really order that
much.
I don't really order expensive stuff.
I mean,
just big appetite, you know?
If I want expensive stuff, I'm going to cook it for myself. Like, if I want a 24-ounce T-bone steak, I'm not going to go to a steakhouse and spend $40 for it. I'm going to go to a butcher and spend $20 on it and cook it better.
No, I mean,
everybody can't cook like you, Booba.
No,
man,
but that's what I'm saying. Like, I would much rather just eat a normal. Like, I'm not going to go get the most expensive item because the chances are it's not going to be that great.
I don't know.
I order what sounds good.
Understood.
And if I go to a steakhouse that's $70, I'm going to get the $25 bacon cheeseburger because I wanted a bacon cheeseburger.
I mean, here's the deal. It's a pretty obtuse dude who orders the most expensive item on the menu, a couple of alcoholic beverages, and an upgraded salad. I mean,
agreed.
I mean,
upgrade my salad.
He could
Roberto.
Be a cocky guy. That's the only thing I mean, he leads to.
I mean, here's the deal. I get it. Like, some people, like, there was a point where I was trying to watch what I was eating, and so I was eating a lot of fish, and fish are inherently more expensive in this part of the country, right? And so, like, I knew it was going to be pricey, and I was a little bit careful about it. But, like, and there's a sense that when other people are paying, you don't want to be perceived as taking advantage of them. So it's either one or two things. Either he recognizes that perception and does not give a flying flip about it, or he doesn't recognize that perception at all and isn't and so basically doesn't understand why anybody would be upset with him. He's got to be – I would call that part ridiculous. Like, you got to be really, really an exception of a dude to be in that category. So my guess is that he knows it. He knows – he doesn't consider taking advantage. He's just otherwise making the best of an offer that somebody made.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not disagreeing with that statement, but, like, the parents are the one who's asking for advice. They just need to deal with being generous.
Yeah, yeah. So here's the thing: is here's what I would do. Here's what I do to test the situation. Because here's the deal: you don't have to. I don't know that you have to tolerate someone who is intentionally taking advantage of you.
No. I'd take him to McDonald's. What's the worst?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you do not have to do that. But if you've chosen to be generous in this situation, you can't just put parameters on that.
No, yeah. So here's what we do. I would show up. I wouldn't mention it. And I would just, one of those dinners, I would just have him pay for his own meal. And then if he thinks the option, then he might have to pay for his own meal and he orders differently next time, you'll know you found the man.
Yeah. I'll just have the side salad.
Just wait till the end and be like, that's two chicks. Two chicks.
And then Brody goes, oh, crap.
Yeah. That's what
I work. I'm a barista.
Now, here's the thing. This much money. If Brody goes, oh, crap, right? You caught a man who was trying to take advantage of
you. Agreed.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Yep. There's a good chance this guy is a shyster.
Yep.
It sounds like he is. I cannot imagine any situation where I would be with somebody and then take, like, their parents take me out to dinner. I get the most expensive thing, a couple alcoholic drinks, get the upgraded salad deal, right? Like,
upgrade my salad.
That's a shysty deal.
Yeah.
But if the parents are continually doing that, they are taking on that burden on themselves.
Well, that's the question. I think they're asking whether they continue to do it.
I don't think they need to call this person out in this deal. They just take him to either a different place where he can't do that or stop taking him out.
Actually, hold on. I rescind my suggestion. You need to just talk to the man.
Yeah.
As the parent?
He's not a foreigner.
No, I'd send the dad and do
like
it.
A guy that just, you know, he just seemed like a guy that's basically cocky to me. Like, he may feel like, man, his vibe is so great that people will want to just be around him. Like, his presence must bring some type of spark around people, and he can just feel like...
I love the way you put stuff, Nick Harris.
Yeah.
His vibe is so great, and he got a spark about him.
He brings
what he thinks.
He could be the guy that crack all the jokes and, oh...
Yeah, I'm Brody.
He felt like he's
upgrade
earning
my salad.
Yeah, that's right. He's earning a couple of drinks and an extra Cobb salad.
Yeah, he's talking his way. He's finessing his way into getting the things he wants, basically.
Here's the deal. There's never anything wrong with talking to a man.
I'll agree with that. I think that's fine.
I mean, how that conversation going to go? I'll be Brody.
Okay.
Hey, Brody.
Bubba's going to do it wrong because he don't support the premise. Hey, Brody.
Yeah.
I find that whenever we go out to eat, you always order the most expensive item on a menu and a couple brewskis, and you upgrade your salad.
Upgrade my salad.
Yeah. I say, Brody, like, if you was paying for this thing, would you feel like you would act the same? You order the same stuff?
You know what they used to call me back in college?
What did they call you?
Upgrade my salad. Had it on my uniform and everything. I'm sorry. What were you talking about?
That's not the question I asked. I say, not everyone orders this way. And I'm just interested to know, if you were paying, would you be ordering all the same things?
Well, I mean, at this stage in my life, I feel like, I don't really have the money to eat like that, but you guys invited us out everything, and you guys are doing all right. So, you know, I thought maybe that, yeah. What was the question, Pops?
You're no longer married to my daughter.
Tell him, like, so, man, I forgot my wallet at home. And so, see how far that goes.
So
like,
just to clarify, what you're saying is that if you were paying, you would not order this way.
Well, I mean, I can't afford to eat like that on my own dime, you know? That's expensive.
Do you think it's then appropriate to eat like that on my dime?
Well, I mean, you offered to take me out. I mean, you know, Brody.
Yeah. Brody does seem like the kind of guy that would yell his own name as a retort. Brody!
They call me Blackjack Brody.
I'm here.
Two shots of bourbon.
Okay, fair enough, Brody. You're right. We did offer to take you out. I'm actually glad to buy you dinner. I don't mind doing that. I would note that, though, in this circumstance, this might not be seen the same way across to all situations. Generally, like, if someone's offering to buy, it may feel like, at times, like it has for me, that you're taking advantage of the situation. What are your thoughts?
Boy, I feel like my parents should have taught me this or something. I mean, I've been doing this my whole life. We go to McDonald's, I'm like, six Big Macs right now.
Brody.
Good. I'm glad we had this talk. I would expect this to impact how you see this in the future, not only with us, but perhaps with other people you dine with.
You know, to be honest, I was just imagining myself on a movie poster, and I completely didn't listen to anything you were saying. Do they have bourbon here?
It's a movie called Upgrade My Salad.
Top Chef. All right, let's see what Secular has to say. Secular says, if you bring the subject up, I can almost guarantee that what you say will not be well received.
What do you mean? That just worked out great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally.
Here's the deal. Actually, to Ben's point,
I would never shy away from this conversation.
Yeah.
I have these conversations with my kids all the time. I'm pretty straightforward on whether they're acting like a bunch of boobs. I can't imagine that I would allow this son-in-law Brody. I mean, it's just like the guy in 1 Corinthians 5, right? The man acting like a doofus. Like, if you love him, you tell him so. And if he ain't going to change it, you kick him out, right? Here's the way you act in here. If you're not going to act like that in here, you're going to get out. And that's the deal. I love my kids enough to say, look, you know, when you go out in public or when you – this is the etiquette when you go out with people. And if Brody's going to be in my family and cuddle up next to my daughter after they're married, then here's the deal, Brody. You're going to get your act together. You're not going to act like this all the time. And so if I don't love him enough to say that, I don't love him. So I think the right move, and it's not even a bold move, it's just the right move, is to talk to the man.
Yeah.
Let's see. I assume those dinner invitations would be few and far between, and you would have to explain the reason to your daughter. When they dine out with contemporaries, contemporaries.
What?
Would you like to dine out with me, contemporary?
Hipsters.
Presumably, the bill is split between the couples. If that isn't the case, it probably wouldn't happen twice because the other couple would likely request separate checks.
Hey, yeah, I would. So here's the deal. It was like after I had that conversation, I would ask for separate checks. And then I'd probably pay them both anyway, but I'd like to see him sit at it. Just
sweat it out a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They don't take Discover, Brody.
Yeah.
Hope you brought your dish rag.
Oh. Hey, here's the thing. Is there?
Just upgrade that wallet, Brody.
Here's where I think we need to be careful because, like,
I don't.
No, hold on.
I think we're on the right track, Bill.
So Boober's perspective is understandable, right? Like, if you're going to offer, you should be gracious. And like, who is it? Dave Herrick's always talking about like if you're going to do something, be lavish about it. We just like we're not marginally gracious. We're just gracious.
Okay. Dave Herrick also insists when people ask about how that we can afford to take people out, I'm supposed to say I have a backer. And when they say, who's your backer? I'm supposed to say, God.
No, he does not say that.
Of course he does, with his big Dave Herrick smile,
yeah.
And he means it.
All
and
right,
he would probably
that
use
does,
it.
That does sound, hey, man, but he's genuine about that.
I know.
I got a backer.
Maybe the Lord Jesus did it. Maybe,
God's my backer, like I'm some kind of pool shark or something. Anyway.
So I agree with that, but like, I don't know, like, it is also, like, if we have a responsibility to otherwise not allow, I don't think as part of being gracious, it says, go ahead and let foolishness go on underneath you and turn a blind eye to it. I think there are plenty of opportunities to be gracious that don't allow people to act ridiculous, especially people you have influence over.
I agree with that, but that's not within the scope of what we're talking about. We're talking about taking someone out to dinner.
Yeah, Ben.
What?
Like, I agree with the concept that generosity does not necessarily have to come with being taken advantage of. However, yep. we're dealing with lunch. We're dealing with dinner.
Oh, no,
now,
hold on a minute.
Now, if Brody comes up to me and it comes into the whole generosity of like, hey, man, you should be generous because Jesus says so. Can I have your car? No. No, I'm not going to give you my car. But if you come up to me and say, hey, man, you willing to spend $40 on my dinner? Well, I invited you out. Sure.
No, now hold on a minute. You've intentionally slighted this like some sort of like cable news show analyst. First of all, you throw out lunch as if it slides it that he's getting like a sack lunch and a diet soda.
No, that's why I said $40
for
him.
He's getting the most expensive item, a couple of drinks, and
agreed.
An upgraded salad.
Agreed. But you were the one who invited him out multiple times.
Yeah,
you're right. You are absolutely right. There is place where generosity does not mean you have to be taken advantage of. I would never say that you need to. People deal with that all the time where they have to be generous, but then you don't necessarily have to be taken advantage of just because you're Jesus folk. I agree with that statement. Don't be a dummy and give every bit of your money away to every single person think Jesus says so.
But that's the thing. It's already happened. Like, let's say I invite you over to help me paint my house. And after it's done, I'm like, Boova, thanks for helping me paint my house. Let's go out to dinner, man. I'll cover it. And so we run into the Applebee's, and you order $75 worth of food when we're at the Applebee's. You've already taken advantage of me, because I was under the assumption that you would have ordered a reasonable meal, and you came out of left field and ordered like $80 worth of food. Like, how are they supposed to premeditate that?
Boova, selfish bastard.
Yeah. It's the Applebee's, Boova. What'd you order?
I agree with that. 17. I'm not saying anything for the merit of the person that's willing to rack up a $75 Applebee's bill. But you do not exist in the place where you are there to let your generosity be housed on their merit. It
that's
is not
horse,
their,
this is
no,
horse duty.
Here's the deal.
So wait,
you deal
Mike
with it the one
no,
time.
You're saying
I'm not
has
saying
no
you
right.
invite them out again.
You're saying Mike has no right to invite him out to dinner again unless he's willing to accept the premise that you can act like an ape. Have the conversation.
Here's the deal. I'm not saying against the conversation. I'm saying have that friggin' conversation. But if you're already out to dinner, the dude's already being a boob, deal with it in that situation, and then afterwards go, hey, Brody, that was a really jerk thing to do. You and I both know you didn't need to order all that stuff. You probably wouldn't do it on your own. Let's not do that again. And if he does it a friggin' second time, stop inviting him out to dinner. But
that's true. If Boova's behavior was after the house painting incident that he spent $80 at the Applebee's, the next time we were in town and the wife's like, we should take Boova, I'll say no.
Remember, yeah, no. Remember that last time he ordered $75 for the Applebee's? He was a schmuck. I'm not taking out him again.
Well, no,
maybe we can go to the Mickey D's and see what he can do.
I understand that, but it's a bit of an evasive response to the conversation, because the point is, like, if you've not had the conversation, you can have the conversation. But it is not wrong for you to expect or feel like it's okay to limit what people do just because you've made a gracious gesture, right? Just because I say, hey, friend, will you want to come into my house and cool down for a while? It's hot outside, and I saw that you were working, because I say that to my neighbor. That is not my acknowledgement that he can use my house at
right.
any time he
no,
wants.
No, I'm not saying, my problem is not with the expectation that they should act reasonably, but you and I both know that doesn't ever happen. Like, it rarely happens to where people live up to your happy expectations. People are crap. We are inherently crap. People do stupid stuff all the time. People take advantage of you all the time. You do have to set limits on it. But at the same point in time, if you're already out to dinner, the guy's already being a boob, friggin' pay for it. And then the next time, just go, hey, man, that was a schmuck deal. Let's not do that again.
Well, no, yeah, right. I mean, that's not a
I'm not against that conversation. I'm not saying that's a problem. If you're at dinner with that guy, you've already invited him out. He's already been a schmuck. That's not the right time to go, hey, Brody, you're a schmuck. I'm not paying for you.
Well,
you friggin' pay for him in the situation. You have the conversation with him afterwards. Hopefully your expectation's better in the first place, and hopefully he's better for it. But when you're in the scenario, generosity, just friggin' do it. $75 is not that big of a difference between the 25. I know that I'm splitting hairs there, but it's the truth.
Well, right, but that's not a notion of generosity. That's simply you don't want to start a fight in the middle of it.
No, no, I'm not saying don't start the fight. Start the fight. Have the conversation later on.
You just said not to do it then.
Don't do it then. Do you really think that's going to be a good conversation to have at that point in time?
Like, when's the right time to discipline your kids?
I do it right now.
That's right.
In fact, I'm going to call home right now. I'm sure they're doing bad stuff.
That's not fair. Brody's not your child. Brody is not your child.
Yeah, he is. He's my son-in-law.
No, Brody is not your child. The person you're trying to have a conversation with about dinner is not your child. This is not a disciplinary situation with you and your child.
Yeah, it is.
This is you are an adult.
He's in an intimate community with me.
No,
he's going out
to eat with me. Adult talking to another adult.
I didn't invite Angela Merkel out. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is a dude that I see on the regular. I wouldn't let one of my friends act like that.
I agree.
Something tell me that this guy just pops up at places too. Like, they like, he just pop up, like his daughter just texts mom and dad, like, hey, where are you guys at? And then they just pop up at the restaurant.
What's for dinner, ding dong? And I was already there.
Order some extra cheddar biscuits. We coming by the Red Lobster.
Hey, man, I know you guys got the Dish Network, and I really wanted to watch the show. I'm showing up. All right. Good to see you. What's for lunch?
What's for lunch?
Here's the deal.
Brody's stomach a bourbon.
I don't have any problem.
Brody's hungry right now.
I don't have any problem if I was out to dinner with Mike, and Mike orders some kind of massive deal to the waiter, for me to look over at Mike and say, hey, man, next time I ain't paying more than $20 for you. Don't take advantage of me. I don't have any problem doing that right now.
I agree.
He's also your brother.
Well, I do it to you.
This is my son-in-law.
I'm your
We just met, Boova. Don't be acting like we go way back.
Oh, really? Okay, sorry. Hi. By the way, my name's Boova. Nice to meet you. My apologies.
I would not do anybody the disrespect of not saying that regardless of how long we've known each other. Hey, dude.
You can say that right now, but I highly doubt it.
You're mistaken.
Knowing you, I highly doubt it.
You have no idea how socially awkward I can be.
That's my point.
I could definitely do it.
No, that's not true. It's not the same situation, but like, I've had conversations with people that it was like a business lunch, and I'd known them for maybe an hour, and they did something weird. They were eating something in a funny way. I'm like, hey, man, you always eat your corn on the cob like a weirdo? Because, I mean, you look ridiculous the way you're eating that corn on the cob. And I would consider that a very similar conversation to someone trying to take advantage of me.
You would consider, hey, man, you eat corn on the cob funny in comparison to, hey, you probably have a serious character flaw about you in which you constantly take advantage of people who are trying to be generous.
Yeah, yes. But I wouldn't say it like that. I would say, hey.
But those are the conversations we're talking
about. Everyone else ordered an $8 meal. Ordered a $40 meal. You're a jerk face. You will be paying for your $40 meal.
Actually, I probably would say, hey, man, everyone else ordered $8 meals. You ordered $40. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, $40
say,
is
your
a
thoughts,
lot
man?
To play for lunch.
What?
Like, I mean, how long then is maybe a lunch
break? First off, you guys can continue to say that. I highly doubt it, first off. But still, continue to hear. Fine. That's wait, different for
next
me.
Next time we go out,
that
I'm
is different
be,
for me. I would pay for the person there and then have a conversation with them later.
Even at Outback Steakhouse.
Even at Outback.
You would have to, man, $20 for
$20,
a steak.
Yeah, Outback's ridiculous. That's what you get for going to a chain steakhouse that never went to Australia to figure out their menu.
I'm just saying, like, Subway only.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, you don't go to the Outback and go, hey, where's the Bloomin' Onions? They go, here they are, aplenty.
I love those.
Like, that's not the situation. That's the Aboriginals are not like, oh, Bloomin' Onion. That does not happen.
A boo-boo, oh. A boo-boo, oh, hot.
We ate some kind of gecko from the ground, yeah. And here's our fried Bloomin' Onion that's with right. Our fancy sauce.
Do you guys have any bourbon?
No.
A boo-boo, oh.
What's the secular advice?
We already read it.
What was it?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It was something about they're going to split the bills. He's
Boo-boo
probably not going to
shut his mouth.
I can't
get a word in edgewise.
But I get what Boo was coming from. Like, I mean,
of course, Nick Harris will meet him halfway. Go ahead, Nick Harris.
Meet him
tell
halfway.
Tell me how you think he's an all right guy.
I don't meet him halfway. I'm not going to just let y'all jump on Boo, man. I mean,
this has been going
course,
on for like 8 years. I don't care.
What if Bubba killed a man, Nick Harris? You'd be like, well, he probably had reasons. I hate it when you guys yell at Bubba for killing people.
If the glove don't fit, you must have quit.
Every time he kills a guy, you're like, yeah, yell at him,
hey,
at
man,
him.
Jesus says that's a bad deal.
Nick Harris said, ah, come on, you know, he's not a bad guy.
Actually, here's the deal. Here's the show that I can't wait for is when Bubba starts creating robotic mosquitoes in his basement. And then we'll see where Nick Harris is at.
Nick Harris is like, hey, man, I'm not really for that robot mosquitoes, dude. Like, that's DNA you're trying to take from people.
Harrison, Boo, you really put me in a bad spot here.
I see where Boo is coming from.
I want to meet you halfway on this robot mosquitoes thing. I got a cell phone. That's basically a robot mosquito.
He paid for him with the chip in his wrist. Take that, Harrison.
Man, I'd rather spend my night seeing Mike drink half a shot of bourbon.
I'm coming over there. Dang, I got to get some bourbon. Boo's going to hook me up.
I'm going to hook you up.
This is going to be great, man.
That's good.
I just got a bottle of bourbon for my birthday that I'm going to give to you.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I mean, is it high-end?
Yeah, it's really high.
Is it called high-end bourbon?
No, it's called Rebel Yell.
I wish it was called high-end bourbon.
Okay, well, I will put a post-it like that dude did on that faucet for Ben, and I will say high-end. Maintenance is coming.
Yeah. High-end. Yeah, say it like that. Maintenance is coming.
Oh, man.
You ever listen to Live from the Path on Live from the Path? You know, you probably ain't listening on the website. Our traffic's low.
Yeah. I mean, people stop. But actually, it's weird. I keep, I don't know if you guys get the notification from Facebook, but like I get a few a day. It's like, hey, someone new has looked at Live from the Path. I'm like, what the heck is that happening? Yeah.
Do you just want to message him real quick? Like, hey, well, why were you here?
It won't tell me who it is. Otherwise, yeah, like inquire is like, what happened to your life, buddy? But here's the deal. It's like I listened back to a few past shows. I'm like, well, actually, this is kind of helpful. So, I mean, here's the deal. There might be some value to it.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Okay. All right. There we go. Finally got it. Hey, you've been listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. We're glad to be back. Seriously, help me out here. Like, I know we're not good at keeping up with some stuff, but like, I really would like to have some of these conversations about gospel changing the world. So if you can join us on Twitter or Facebook and maybe respond that way, help us. I want to have the right conversation. You don't have to have all the answers. Just want to have the right conversation. And so help us out with that. Let's see. Hey, Tim Timmons is going to be in Oskaloosa on August 5th. I mean, he's coming right up,
soon?
Man. Yeah. Yeah, he's coming right up.
I'm going. It's a done deal.
I want to go.
Me and the kids are going to go.
Okay, crap. I got to figure that out because I want to go.
I'll go.
Yeah, all right. Everybody's in.
Can I ride with you?
Harris, you coming?
Yeah.
Okay, Harris going to come. Well, all right.
Hey, bring me that bourbon in a paper bag.
Deal.
You ain't drinking that bourbon up to the Tim Timmons show.
On the Oski Square.
You're going to be sauced in Oski talking to Timmons.
I've been making that noise. Timmons like, why is that guy hate the show?
He's breathing fire in the back row.
Looks
Christmas
like a feral
sock
cat
on his head, like man.
And next week, hopefully, we'll be able to catch up with Dan. Dan Hudson is back from a recent trip to Zimbabwe. Sounds like a lot of cool stuff. I'm interested to hear his take on. I don't know how does that change how he looks at ministry here. How does it change on how he looks on the types of things that we do outside of these walls and in the rest of the world? And it actually seems like it would be a good part of the conversation that we're starting today. So anyway, we'll look forward to hearing from Dan next week. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.